ようこみわショーへようこそ。
Well, here we are again for another episode of the Yoko Miwa Show. Of course, Yoko's here with me. And the last time we spoke, you had just told a story about Minoru Ozone, the father of Makoto Ozone, who is a B3 player, and he had a club where you worked as a server, but also you took lessons from him. And the story you told last time was about memorizing an entire piece he had played, including his solo, and bringing it back and playing it for him, and he was very impressed. And we stopped there, but I think that there are probably other stories from your time working in Minoru's club. So I thought maybe that would be a place we could start, and you could tell us more about that experience.
Sure. Actually, I think I repeated the same process. Every 2 weeks, he gave me a new piece, new song he played from the beginning to the end, you know, included his solo and everything. And I tried to memorize everything from the beginning to the end. That's how I learned how to play jazz. So I think I did at least 2 years, something like that. I don't think we talked about too much theory or anything, just, you know, played together. I think he was playing B3 organ in a room, you know, playing with me together with piano. So that's all I remember. And also, I remember he had his own radio show, and I was invited as a guest to his show, and I played some tunes in his, on his show. That was fun too.
Now, were you improvising at this point, or were you still just kind of playing the things he had played and repeating them back?
I think I was kind of mixing up everything, like copying his stuff, and I was improvising also. I remember I was writing. I was transcribing a lot just by myself, you know, like Bill Evans, Oscar Peterson, or even Charlie Parker, or any singers, scat, whoever I listened to. I liked the solo I wrote down. And, you know, still I was struggling how to play solo by myself. So I remember I was like writing down 2 measures of his Bill Evans solo. And then I was writing my own solo 2 measures, and I was using like Oscar Peterson's like 2 measures solo and then my own solo, you know, like putting together everybody's solo on some song. I was learning it.
And so, you knew at this time that their solos they had made up on the spot, right?
Yeah.
You were aware of how improvisation worked, even though you were at the beginning of figuring out how to do
right,
it yourself.
Exactly. But I just didn't know how to do it by myself.
Sure.
Know? So that was the closest thing I can do, just using somebody's solo, just the very small sections, and use my own ideas. So that was, you know, how I started to doing my own solo.
Now, did you get to see other jazz musicians? Would other people come to this club and play besides just Minoru and Makoto? Other musicians came and played too?
Right. That was his club, you know, Makoto's father's club. So, but he, Minoru's other son, Hiroshi, his name is Hiroshi, his younger brother of, you know, Makoto's brother's younger brother. He plays saxophone, and he was there every weekend playing with father Minoru.
Okay.
Also, there was a singer, very popular singer in our town in Kobe. So she was there too. But yeah, mostly somebody like that, and sometimes some special guest. I remember maybe once Paquito de Ribeiro came to our, because they had a cruise, jazz cruise, in my city, the Kobe, and they played together, you know, so there was they played together in the Minerals Club too. I remember that.
Now, during the time that you were working at his club and studying with him, what were you doing outside of that? Were you playing any gigs? Were you in school otherwise?
Right. I was still in college studying classical music.
Okay.
So this was outside of college thing. You know, even my teacher at the college, she knew I was studying jazz outside of the school, and she was very curious too. Like, so you're studying jazz, huh? So very, you know, totally different. So yeah, that was outside thing, and I was doing a lot of part-time job, busy working, and then go home and practice whenever I have time. So I was doing a lot of stuff.
Was it hard to be both studying classical music full-time and studying jazz at the same time?
Yeah, I think so. But I just, you know, I separated studying classical and jazz. I enjoyed both, you know, enjoyed playing both. So, and also, I started to play with other people I met at Minoru's in Ozori Music School. Kind of everybody was, you know, beginner jazz musicians, and we got together and we were practicing, you know, some songs together every weekend, something like that. And then maybe we got some small gigs once in a while. It was fun.
And so how did you start to get more comfortable as an improviser?
Just repeated the same process, like I said, you know, studying somebody else's, you know, like, you know, the writing down, transcribing. Last time I was in Japan, I think it was a couple years ago, cleaning my piano room. You know, my mom told me, like, can you clean up your piano room?
Like, all your stuff is still in there.
I know. And your books, and, you know, you have a lot of music stuff in your piano room. Can you, you know, clean up? And I was, you know, looking at a lot of books I have, like, wow, I used to practice this book, or wow, I have something like this. I was kind of, you know, interested reading everything. And then I found a bunch of papers I transcribed, bunch of transcriptions. And then I was very surprised to see how many I transcribed back then, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
And how did you do at the transcriptions now that you look at them and you know so much more?
I brought them back to here. I felt bad, like, throwing away.
Looking at them, what did you think? Did you do a good job transcribing all those years
ago? I think so. Yes. It's like a tiny notes. You know, I used to write a tiny notes, like even writing, you know, everything. So like a music notes, even tiny, tiny, very small. It's like, wow, I can't read it.
Yeah, well, the older we get, the bigger the notes get, I think. That's how that works.
Yes.
So during this time, you're studying classical music full time. You're working at Minoru's Club. You're playing jazz too. What did you think you were going to do with your life at this point? Had you started to make some decisions about the direction you were going to take?
No, I didn't know. I didn't know, but I knew I wanted to play at the clubs, like his clubs someday. But it was like a, you know, dream, just my dream. And I never thought that will be, you know, be like dream come true someday. But I just, yeah, that was my dream. I wanted to be jazz pianist and performing all the time. Maybe like my biggest dream was going to Tokyo, performing in Tokyo all the time.
And so were you finishing the classical degree because you had started it and it seemed like you should finish? Or even,
of course, yeah.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Even though you knew that you didn't want to be a concert pianist necessarily.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, of course I knew I had to finish. I wanted to graduate from the college wherever I was.
Rather than, you know, for example, rather than going to a jazz school and switching and...
Right. I wasn't thinking, you know, there were not many schools you can go to study that point. And I knew a couple of places, but I wasn't thinking because I was studying with Minoru Ozone. So to me, that was enough at that point.
What was the next kind of big step in your evolution? Was it finishing college and deciding what to do next, or what was the next big turning point for you?
You know, I think that point, I was already, I was, as soon as I studied with Minoru at his school, they asked me if I want to teach classical piano to the, you know, little kids or beginner. And I was already teaching at home a lot of students, you know. And I thought, oh, sure, that's great opportunity for me teaching at the music school. I teach at home anyway. So that's what I started doing it. And then after a couple of years studying with Minoru, they asked me if I want to teach jazz. So I started to teach like a very fundamental, like jazz, you know, beginner, yeah, basic jazz.
Sure.
And then they had singers, you know, the classes too. And they asked me if I want to be accompanist for the singers classes. And I said, sure. But I didn't know much about, you know, accompanying the singers. But I grew up accompanying, like playing, you know, for singers at the school from like first grade to whatever, you know, until high school. That was
sure.
My thing. Whenever you have competition thing or whatever, I was the accompanist at the school. So I was pretty good at playing with singers, but I didn't know there are a lot of rules for jazz, you know, singer stuff. So, but I learned a lot from accompanying the singers and doing the work, because they told me, okay, let's do All of Me. It's written key of C, but, you know, let's do key of G. One, two. You know, like, what? I was almost in tears, and every time, like, and an intro, one, two. I was like, oh. So I was, you know, writing down all the possible, the chord progressions for the introduction, intro, and the ending. You know, you have to finish the song nicely, and transposing, you know, to the several possible keys, like
sure.
Maybe C and G, you know, B flat, whatever. So I stay up late and then writing down all the chords and stuff. But I did that work many years, and I learned a lot, and then eventually I got better at it.
I remember when the first time I lived in Japan, I lived in a small town in the north, and nobody where I lived spoke English, and I didn't speak a word of Japanese, but I learned very quickly, and all of my friends who went to school in Sendai, who went to an international school, they learned Japanese much more slowly because they didn't need to speak it, they just learned if they wanted to, and in my case, if I wanted to eat or find a bathroom or anything, I had to learn to speak Japanese. And it sounds like that's exactly, I mean, there's no better way to learn than being thrown into the deep end, I think. And right. That's exactly what happened to you, it sounds like, with this accompanying class.
Right, right. Yeah. That was almost like horrifying sometimes. Like, you know, okay, what is she going to tell me today to, you know, which key or which tempo, you know? So yeah, that was a great experience.
You mentioned that, and we don't have to do a lot of detail on this, but you mentioned that there are rules for accompanying singers. Can you just give us, like the general listener, an idea of some things you have to pay attention to when you're playing with a singer?
Yes. You know, first of all, you are supporting singers, not, you know, that's not you showing off, you know, what you can do. You can do videos, you know, much less playing than usual, or supporting singers, make them sound good. That's our job. And also, most important thing is you don't want to play something clash with the melodies. Melody is most important, so you have to choose notes very carefully what to play behind what they're singing and the melody. The same as backing up the home players too. They're very similar.
So I can imagine that after you spent all this time backing up singers, it must have been much easier for you to play with horn players.
Yeah, It's a little different, but yes, definitely I learned a lot. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's pause our story there. But as always, we end every episode of the show with one of your tunes. And what have you got picked out for us this time?
Okay. This is from my, let me see. This is my fourth album, The Day We Say Goodbye. But this is, the song is written by Larry Goldings. And it's called Where We've Been.